Hi, this is
Okay. Let me officially welcome everyone to today's Conversations with the Masters call with Arjuna Ardal. My name is Mary Allen, and I'm a Master Certified Coach, author of The Power of Inner Choice, and of course, your host of the Conversations with the Masters series. Before I introduce Arjuna officially, let me just make sure he's on the right side of the bridge line. Is Arjuna speaking? This means that Arjuna, if you're speaking, you're on mute or you have not the right PIN number. So I'm going to email that PIN number to Mike. I want to get you on the right side of the fence. Let me just do this. Okay, I've just opened up the lines. Do I have Arjuna now?
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm using the pin that I got from your assistant.
Okay. So you.
So
I'm going to just tell you the pin, and everyone's going to plug their ears. If you can dial in on 6835.
Okay.
So hang up and dial back in, and we will begin again.
Oh, I see. Could you give me the phone number again? Because I don't have it here.
646-519-5800. And then 6835. Okay. No worries. Somehow I had a feeling he might not be on the right side of the fence.
Who's that laughing?
Yes. Creates for a little bit more excitement. This is with the technology. They're still about getting perfect alignment with technologies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm back.
There we go. Okay, let me just try one more time. I'm going to mute everybody out. And I have Arjuna.
I'm here.
Yay! Okay, perfect.
Great.
We are now ready to officially begin. So, before I introduce Arjuna, I want to just welcome all of our live listeners here today and those of you that may be listening to this as a recording. I want to really just heartfelt thank you for continuing to spread the word about this Conversations with the Masters series. I mean, even up to the last moment, I know some of you are spreading the word. Today's call is being recorded, so you can go back and listen again or refer a friend to listen. And if you've pre-registered for the call, you'll be receiving a special follow-up email later this week. So look for that. There'll be some links that you'll want to take advantage of. And I really want to invite you to really clear all distractions. Allow yourself to really be with today's call fully. I suspect that this will be a call you'll want to listen to again and again. And I'm particularly delighted to introduce Arjuna to you today, partly because I've really gotten to know this amazing man over the last 7 months or so, since I was first introduced to him by listening to a live conference call kind of similar to this. I immediately ended up hiring him as my personal coach. I've since attended 2 different 5-day trainings. I invited Arjuna to speak at my 4-day Inner Peace Immersion Retreat that's in October 20 through the 24th. And there's so much I appreciate about this master, his wisdom, his humor, as you will see, his heart, his creativity, and I know you're all probably going to fall in love with him like I did as well. So let me give you now an official introduction of Arjuna. Arjuna Ardal is the author of 7 books, including the 2005 national bestseller, The Translucent Revolution, and his latest book, Leap Before You Look. He's trained more than 800 facilitators of awakening since 1995, and has been working with people both individually and in organizations since 1983. He speaks at conferences all over the world, including the International Conference on Business and Consciousness, the conferences at Omega Institute, recently a huge event that Ken Wilber does at New Year's. He's coached leaders of many international companies in the art of awakening leadership. He's been on TV, on the radio, and print media in 12 countries. He's also a member of the Transformational Leadership Council. Arjuna was educated in England at King's School in Canterbury. You'll notice his British accent. He later earned his master's degree at Cambridge University. And since the early age of 14, he's had the passionate interest in spiritual awakening and began his practice of meditation and yoga at that time. Even in his late teens, he trained as a meditation teacher, and he's lived and studied and worked with a great number of spiritual teachers, both in Asia and in the U.S. And it's just my privilege and honor of bringing you Arjuna. So Arjuna, welcome, welcome. Are you there?
Sorry. You hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
I was just saying, I think after that build-up, I can only be a disappointment. You know?
Oh, that's not true. That's not true.
That's okay. The good news is that what's important here is not, what's important in what we speak about is not any particular individual, but a shared meme, a shared recognition. So
yeah.
Luckily, it doesn't matter so much what you think about Arjuna or even about Mary. What's important is what you recognize to be true about yourself. So that lets me off the hook a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you're pretty fabulous also, but let's not build up that expectation.
Well, you know what they say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
That's right. That's right. Well, so one of the, you are a teacher of awakening, and so, you know, got to ask you the question coming right out of the gate. You know, what is this thing called awakening?
Okay, great, beautiful place to start. So, the simplest way to say this is that usually you could say that the default setting or the normal setting for human beings is like this. That we are having experiences. You know? That means we're seeing things, we're hearing things, we're feeling sensations in our body. Correct? Could you, Mary, would you say on behalf of your listeners that that represents our shared experience?
Absolutely.
Okay, beautiful. We're hearing things, we're seeing things, we're having shared experiences. Correct?
Yeah.
All right. And that's true of babies. It's true of animals, as far as we know. It's true of a sage, you know, an enlightened sage, you want to say, or an awakened sage. And it's true of all of humanity. Everybody is having these kind of experiences of things we hear, see, and feel, and also taste and smell, right? And that's all good. That is the fabric of our day-to-day experience. Now, in addition to these experiences of seeing and hearing and feeling and tasting and smelling, there is also a secondary layer going on, okay? There is a secondary aspect to our experience, which is that we are also running a commentary on our experience, okay? And we call this commentary thought, right? That's the word we have for it.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I just had a great idea. If you could just give me a second, I'm going to want to continue this, but I just thought of a very special person I want to invite to join this call. So could you just give me a second, and this will be a beautiful thing for her. So
sure.
Could you just quickly, Mary, give me the login page on your website? Because I've got somebody here who I'd like to join.
Yeah, so lifecoachmary.com/...
Mary.com/...
Arjuna Arda.
Arjuna Arda.
.htm. Put the .htm after that.
Beautiful. Sorry to interrupt you, but I just this is just such a golden opportunity for somebody here to enjoy the call with us, and thought it was better to take care of this before I carry on.
That sounds perfect.
Great. And how does she? Is it got the phone number there to join?
And actually, she can use the same phone number, and then the PIN number is 0427 for her.
Beautiful. Okay, so just there you go. There's the number. There's the call-in number, excuse me. And we'll get her going. There we are. Here's the phone, sweetie. Just relax. Enjoy the call, okay? Call that and just have a listen. Nothing else you need to do. Okay, on we go then. Sorry about that.
On we go. So,
yeah, so we're having experiences, things we're seeing and hearing and smelling. I just said that everybody experiences that, whether it's a child or a sage. But most of us, we also have this secondary layer on top of what we're seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting and seeing, which is thoughts about our experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's true, isn't it? Most of us, we're having thoughts about our experience. And those thoughts include judgment, comparison, desire, fear, evaluation, strategy, manipulation, control. There's a whole secondary layer to experience that is actually happening in thought. Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually happening in thought.
And some people may have had those thoughts even just a moment ago.
Okay. We evaluate what we're experiencing with thought. Now, that capacity, that secondary layer to experience, is both a blessing and a curse, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's a blessing because that's what allows us to be creative, okay? It's what allows us to make intelligent choices. You can compare one thing with another. I mean, the Empire State Building, great piece of architecture, only got built because somebody could first envision it in their mind and thought and then translate that into action, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the Sydney Opera House or anything else, okay? Any other great thing, any piece of music, any piece of art, it begins as thought. So this capacity to have thought about life that is not actually your experience is a wonderful thing. It's what makes human beings great and extraordinary and different from animals. Would you agree? Are we so far on the same page?
Absolutely. Very useful in making decisions and, functioning in the day-to-day world.
Exactly. It's a blessing, but it can also become a curse. Now, it becomes a curse when we are unable to switch it off, okay? When we can no longer switch this machine off, which evaluates and judges, and then it actually becomes like an addiction because you are no longer able to just hear a sound or see a movement or enjoy a glass of water or a kiss from your beloved. You're no longer able to enjoy the ordinary things of life because this secondary layer of experience becomes actually an addiction, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think most people know what that's like. When it becomes heavily addictive, when we're just running in thought, then it actually gets called stress, right? Mm-hmm. We call that stress. We can't sleep. We're just caught in compulsive thinking that just drives us from the moment we wake up in the morning till the moment we go to sleep at night. All good?
Absolutely, yep.
Right, okay, good. So, of course, this goes to various degrees, you know? When this level of secondary thinking is really, really strong and active, then we can even go crazy. The extreme of compulsive thinking is madness. But a mild form of compulsive thinking is not thought to be madness. It's just thought to be normal human behavior. And we accept, oh, yeah, that's just what we do as human beings. We have these kind of thoughts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we've come to regard it as normal, even if our hearts, our deepest heart, intuits that it's not natural to have this compulsive machine that we can't switch off. All right. So here's the deal, okay? More and more people, in all kinds of walks and lives and backgrounds, more and more people are having, at least in glimpses, at least you can say in snapshots, more and more people are discovering who who they are and what life is outside of this compulsive tendency towards thinking and evaluating and judging and fearing and all of these things, okay? More and more people are having, at least in a snapshot, it may not be sustained, at least in a snapshot, they're realizing what is reality outside of the mind.
Mm.
And what happens when you have at least a snapshot is that you discover who you are and what reality is completely different than what the mind was telling you. Okay.
Mm.
So, for example, when you look at another human being, your mind will say, oh, that's my wife, or that's my brother, and that person's a Republican, and that person's like this, and that. Your mind is going to give you a flood of labels, which is going to narrow and restrict your experience of that person. But if you can see the other person without the labels, or through the labels, you actually discover a mystery. You discover a vibrant presence, which is somehow undefined and beautiful. And that's, of course, in those moments when you see somebody without labels, is when you experience love.
Mm.
When you look at a beautiful flower, if you see it with the mind very active, you're just going to say, oh, you know, you're going to see its botanical name, or, you know, if it's a rose, you're going to say, well, that symbolizes love, or, you know, or, oh, it's an expensive flower, or whatever. If you see a flower without the mind, you just see beauty, and it draws you into this incredible, incredible mystery of color and creation. Now, with regard to yourself, when you have a moment of experiencing yourself free of thought, you realize that all the thoughts you had about who you thought you were are actually a limitation, because you had labeled yourself as a plumber or a vegan or a Democrat or a, you know, this, or intelligent or lazy or whatever, okay? But you realize all of that was also just thought. So who are you? Who are you outside of this pile of labels and thoughts? And you discover who you are is limitless, is magnificent. It's not that you are a loving person. You are actually love itself prior to any personal identity at all. You discover that who you are is more like what we call God, like a mysterious presence which creates everything from out of itself. Who you really are is not who you thought you were. Now, this kind of realization, Mary, has historically been thought of as mysticism. It's the realm of mystics, people in caves, you know, people in monasteries or whatever. But what we're discovering today is that this kind of realization is not just happening to people in a reclusive context far away from the world. What we're discovering today is that this kind of realization is happening to ordinary people like you and me.
Mm-hmm.
The most dramatic and obvious example of this kind of realization is Eckhart Tolle, who's known to many now, because he was a regular guy. He was actually a graduate student at London University, very depressed, very socially, you know, inept, socially awkward person, okay? And didn't have a girlfriend or any significant relationships. He was just living in a single room, you know, with very isolated in London, feeling suicidal. He had this kind of awakening as a suicidal guy, you know, lonely guy. He had this realization. His whole life turned around. He wrote this book, Power of Now, and then The New Earth. He became very famous. But he's an example. He's an example of somebody who had a dramatic shift and wrote a book about it. But there are actually millions and millions and millions of people now all over the world who are having this same kind of shift, okay? Maybe not in such a sustained way, maybe more in a snapshot, but we are actually beginning to see a global movement from mind-based living to awakening living.
Mm.
And this is what our work is all about, is facilitating that shift.
And this has really shifted a lot since the 1990s. Like, all of a sudden it seems like teachers of awakening have recognized that, you know, people had not much of an idea of what that place of being was really like, and now it's becoming more that more people are recognizing it, and now it's really more about how can we deepen this awakening experience and not just have it as glimpses here and there, but have it more sustained.
Yes, 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 and that's a good point. Now, one point is deepening it, and one point is sustaining it. Those are both good points, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's another dimension as well. Okay? Because having the realization can actually be, in a certain way, a fairly narcissistic preoccupation. You know, my enlightenment, quotes, is actually a fairly narcissistic preoccupation. You know, my state of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the deepening of that is also actually can be a fairly narcissistic, me-centered thing. You know, how deep am I? So we can become very self-absorbed when we're thinking about our spiritual state. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
With me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and even the sustaining of it can also be a fairly self-involved preoccupation. But there's another piece that opens up, which changes everything. That we realize that when we were caught in thinking and reactive feeling, when we were caught in all these things, actually, all there was a personality. Okay? A personality that is fairly reactive and controlling and manipulative. And so, you could say the deeper gift which we are capable of giving, the deeper gift was actually held back.
Mm.
We were not able to give our deeper gift because we were so wrapped up in me-based living. Now, here's the beautiful thing. Here is the beautiful, wonderful, amazing, extraordinary thing, is when the personality dissolves, subjectively, you have the feeling, I've disappeared, like I'm not here. You know, there's nobody here. Subjectively, you have the feeling that I now don't exist. There's no reference for me anymore. But that's subjectively. When you turn to yourself, you feel, I'm not here. But objectively, in other words, our other people start to experience this incredible transmission and gift coming from you. So you feel like I'm nobody and nothing, but other people feel like, wow, now there is really a gift and a transmission and a beauty coming from this person. So the more you disappear, the more tangible the gift is that is flowing through you. Okay? The more tangible gift flowing through you. Now, this is where the whole thing becomes pragmatic, because we realize that true greatness, this is a greatness mystery, true greatness comes through you when you are not there. What does that mean? True greatness flows through you when you are not there. So when you can't find yourself, when you step out of your own way, to use Rumi's words, when you are washed clean of yourself, when you are washed clean of yourself so you can't find yourself anymore, then greatness flows through you like a light shining through transparency or translucence, as we like to call it.
And it almost sounds counterintuitive. I mean, I think there's a lot of people, it's like, well, wait, I don't want to, you know, lose myself or... Like, what do you say to people that, you know, step into that? It's like, well, I like myself, you know, I've got strengths and, you know, I like my personality and so forth.
Yeah.
But that actually kind of keeps them it sort of trapped in a way.
Yes, okay, good. Well, the thing is, okay, it's true. It's true that we are somehow addicted to the personality. But at the same time, we also feel restricted by the personality. I think most people know what this is like. People feel addicted to their sense of being somebody, but also restricted by it. And, you know, why do people have sex when it's not to make babies? Right? What is the motivation of sex when it is not just to make a baby?
Because it's fun?
I mean, I'm go ahead, yeah.
Well, for pleasure, right?
Well, pleasure, yeah, pleasure. Okay.
To connect.
But to connect, yeah. But I think, you know, what often happens in sex, which is what makes sex so appealing, is that we transcend ourselves. You know, in a moment of orgasm, your thoughts switch off. You're not really thinking about, you know, your next item on your to-do list when you're having an orgasm. You're completely out of yourself. You're totally transcending your usual preoccupations. You're lifted out of yourself, okay? In the same way, you know, there's lots of moments like that. Why do people jump off bridges on bungee cords? I mean, it's kind of a strange thing to do, like, you know, bungee cord jumping. But
yeah.
I'm pretty sure, I haven't done it myself, but I'm pretty sure that on the way down, you're lifted out of yourself. So actually, yes, in a way, we're addicted to our personalities, but at the same time, we seek out experiences where we transcend our personality, where we feel a sense of oneness or a sense of disappearing or a sense of transcending ourselves. So we all of us love to feel freedom. And just as we were saying at the beginning, there's nothing wrong with the personality. We don't want to get rid of it. okay? But we also don't want to be imprisoned by it. So it's a beautiful thing to have an identity that you can take off and put on again. But imagine, in the same way, it's great to have clothes. You know, it wouldn't be so convenient to walk around stark naked all day. You know, I mean, especially it's not socially acceptable, and where I live, it's too cold, you know? So it's great to have clothes. But now imagine, Mary, imagine if you couldn't get them off, right? Imagine if you were unable to take those clothes off. They had no, you know, if you were sewn into your clothes, then the same thing that was useful would now become very restrictive.
Right.
Great personality. I've got a personality, not a particularly great one, but I've got a personality, and I've got skills and strengths. But the point is, can you take it off, you see? Are you able on a regular basis to take it off and to be nobody?
Mm.
If you can take it off and put it on, it becomes useful. If it's permanently sewn to you, then there's suffering. And we're not just talking about a spiritual thing here. Actually, true greatness, and I've really accumulated massive amounts of proof for this statement, true greatness, true human greatness, is when you have access to this more, to this vaster dimension of yourself. You have access to the vaster dimension of yourself, and you also are able to accept and live with your personality. So, for example, some of the people that I've really gotten to know and to interview are people like, for example, John Gray, okay, who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Mm-hmm.
He's famous as a relationship expert, but what many people don't know about him is that prior to writing that book, he spent 9 years full-time meditating, right? He was in a spiritual community. He was actually living in Switzerland. He was only meditating for 9 years, right? 9 years, and I'm not talking about meditating twice a day and then having a job. He was full-time involved in spiritual practice for 9 years. When he came out, he was still completely, that was all he was interested in when he left his reclusion. He was only interested in meditation and disappearing, the kind of awakening I'm talking about. But he had a brother. John Gray had a younger brother called Jimmy. And Jimmy was bipolar, right? John loved his brother so much, and Jimmy was bipolar. And Jimmy came to John to ask him for help. Jimmy came to John and he said, my brother, can you help me? Because I'm drowning in this state. So John got motivated to help his brother, who he loved so much. He traveled to California to seek out some sort of, you know, alternative remedy or something. He lived in Texas, to seek out some sort of something that could help his brother. Well, he was not able to help his brother, and Jimmy committed suicide.
Oh, wow.
John was so heartbroken by the death of his brother that he really went deeper and deeper. This desire to serve people who were that unhappy became stronger than his own desire for meditation. And so, out of that spaciousness, out of that awakening, out of that easy capacity to appear and disappear at will, he wrote a book. And of course, what happens is when you do anything, as you probably know, when you take on any action from this spaciousness, from this capacity to be spacious, your action is going to be successful. When you're relaxing into being the ocean, then any wave that arises is going to be much more successful than if it's based on individual power. So what happened? He wrote this book. The first book he wrote was called You Can Only Feel What You Can Feel. It's quite successful. Got tied up in a little bit of a publishing dispute because, you know, who owned the rights and so on. So the publisher said, well, you know, this has got a little bit complicated. Could you write another book? John said, okay, I'll write another book. Just, you know, simple book. He wrote this book just simply defining one idea that men and women are different. He wrote this book called Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Mm-hmm.
Book. Successful book. Self-help book ever written.
Right. So what a great example of what life is like after awakening.
Exactly, 50 million copies. But one thing you've got to understand about John, he's a friend of mine. We're in the same men's group together. Very sweet, beautiful guy, okay? The thing about John is not practicing the law of attraction and manifesting all the time, okay? John is not stressing at night, thinking about how can he get more famous. John's love is awakening. That's what he's in love with. He's in love with awakening. He's in love with his wife, Bonnie. He's in love with his kids. He's in love with love. He's in love with this spaciousness. The money and the fame is a kind of secondary thing for him, right? And because he's coming from this spaciousness, everything he does is successful. And I've watched him book after book after book. Everything just goes easy. Another person I've had the same experience with, another good friend, is Jack Canfield, a very beautiful man.
Mm-hmm.
Who, now, what happened for him was he's also been a meditator and a kind of an awakening guy all his life. He was practicing Kundalini yoga years ago and fell into this kind of great spaciousness. So one day he was kind of meditating and relaxing and just playing in the ocean of his own being. And he had this vision, came of a blackboard, and this kind of invisible hand wrote on the blackboard, chicken soup. And he said, I don't know who's writing this, he said, but that's not a good title for a book. He kind of got it that it was supposed to be a book title. He said, that's not a good title for the book, chicken soup. And then the hand came back and added three words, for the soul. He said, okay, that's kind of cute, right? So he went to his friend Mark Victor Hansen, he said, well, this hand came while I was meditating and wrote this thing, and I don't know, I prefer to follow those messages when they come. So Mark Victor Hansen said, whatever, dude, you know? And they went ahead and they tried to sell this book. No publisher would take it. They were rejected by everybody. Nobody would pay in advance. Finally, they got together with, HCH, a small publisher, who said, we won't pay you in advance, but we'll print the book, and we'll just pay you a percentage of what we make. So they said, okay, it's the best we can get. Well, of course, Chicken Soup for the Soul in its various incarnations has now sold 200 million copies. But again, you've got to understand that Jack Canfield was coming from this spaciousness, you see. And I could reel off dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of examples of people whose primary love is this spaciousness, is this letting go, is this vastness of their own being. And then anything they play at, any little thing they play at, is going to be easy because it's not coming from effort. It's coming from an effortless relaxing into the natural creativity which emerges out of their own being.
Beautiful. Well, what do you think makes the biggest difference between, say, somebody who, you know, has an experience like John Gray or Jack Canfield, who's really, you know, fully embracing awakening, versus somebody that, you know, may have a glimpse, but kind of goes about life as usual? Like, what really makes the biggest difference?
Great question. Okay. You asked the best questions, Mary. So
I try.
You know, there was this, you know, I'm sure you know this story. I'm sure you've heard this story. Everyone's heard this story. It's a joke. But there's this guy who arrives at Penn Station. I think it's Penn Station, or one of the, you know, the big Grand Central Station. That's what I want to say. Grand Central Station in New York, right? And he gets out of the station carrying his violin case. He walks up to the taxi stand. He hails the closest taxi, and he says, what is the fastest way to get to Carnegie Hall? Right? What is the fastest way to get to Carnegie Hall? And what does the taxi driver say?
I don't know.
You don't know the joke?
No.
Okay. So there's this young violinist, gets out of the station. He says, he rushes up to the first taxi and says, what is the fastest way to get to Carnegie Hall? The taxi driver looks at him and says, practice, practice, practice. Okay. Get it? Practice, practice. But you want to get to Carnegie Hall, you got to practice. Okay. You want to play in a big concert hall? What have you got to do? You got to practice. Okay. It's a good joke. All right.
Yep.
Now. Okay. So now.
What do we need to practice?
What is the way to get from a glimpse? Everybody has glimpses, by the way. I mean, anybody on this call who's had sex has had a glimpse. Okay. Because when you have an orgasm in sex, you have a glimpse, okay? So as you can tell, I'm quite enthusiastic about having sex. I think that's a very good thing to do.
Right. Amen.
I'm not a Catholic in that sense, okay? or a Muslim or anything, okay?
So the good news is we've all had glimpses.
Everybody has glimpses all the time. Even, you know, even more than that, when you drop off to sleep, there's a gap between your normal waking consciousness and dreams. Between normal waking consciousness and dreams, there is a gap where there's nothing, okay? Now, you're unconscious. That's the point. You're unconscious at that moment, so you don't experience what's going on, but there is a gap when there's nothing going on, and that's been measured with, you know, all sorts of physiological parameters. Okay?
And also, it could also be like a peak experience, like a real moment of presence, like with a loved one, or like a really fulfilling moment. That could be like another glimpse too, when just you're in nature or something.
Totally right. Absolutely. Yeah, totally. The difference is, you see, and it's a small difference. We want to emphasize this so we don't get too much importance on it. This is a small difference. The only difference is whether we're aware of what's going on, you see. If we're not aware of what's going on, then we just kind of bounce in and out of these states and we don't realize what's happening. If we learn how to rest in this kind of presence in a conscious way, in a deliberate way, then it actually translates into a great gift, okay? Then it translates into a beautiful gift.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all to do with practice. Now, here's what I want to say. To get you started, to get your friends started, I have prepared for you a list of practices, 10 practices. Some of them are on PDFs. Some of them are on MP3s, okay? And they're on a website. So we'll actually email this out again, or maybe you would be kind enough to email this link out to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the link is awakeninggifts.com/Allen. That's A-L-L-E-N, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Mary Allen. So it's awakeninggifts.com/Allen.htm, okay? awakeninggifts.com/Allen.htm. Tell me that back again, Mary, to make sure you got it right.
awakeninggifts.com/Allen, A-L-L-E-N.
.htm, okay.
.htm, okay.
Yeah, so that's the address where we've prepared these gifts for you, okay?
And so these practices then basically can take a moment of glimpse and really begin to expand, so this awareness, this awakening, becomes a greater part of your life. Is that the point of the practice?
Yeah, we've shared with you 10 practices, and we'd like for people to go to that page and download them, awakeninggifts.com. But the answer to your question is practice, you see. Everybody has glimpses through the use of short, simple practices. Now, here's what we're not advocating, okay? We're not advocating that you need to have an Indian guru, you know, with a long beard who's, you know, preaching stuff. We're not advocating you have to join a group or change your diet. We're simply saying bring more conscious intention to your life.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to change your religion or anything else, just practice. So these practices we've given you will really make it easy for anybody to dive into this.
Fantastic. That is a fantastic gift. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So just go to awakeninggifts.com/Allen.htm, type in your name and email, and we will forward you the link. Now, what I wanted to say is we've just been shifting over from one server to another, and it's actually taken about 3 months. It's been really a nightmare.
Yes,
so,
I did the same thing.
Yeah, okay. So it's been really difficult for us. So we're definitely going to capture your address today if you go to that page. And if you don't get the link right away, we'll definitely fix it. We're working on that at the moment. So
you and I can be in touch, and I'll be able to get that link out to everybody.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to mention one more thing while we're talking about this. If you want to go deeper, we are going to have a 4-part teleseminar series starting, and I think you actually participated in one of these with us before.
I did.
Yeah. So this 4-part teleseminar series, the one that we'd like to invite your friends to, is going to start in June. And I don't exactly remember the date, so I'm going to have to get it out to you. But I think it's like June, who knows, maybe June 5th or something. It's on a Saturday. Anyway, Saturday morning, 4 Saturday mornings. I'll get the date back to you. But 4 Saturday mornings in June from 10 a.m. till 12 noon, you can be on the call with me for 2 hours. I'll be teaching, explaining how to live all this way. We're also going to have awakening coaches on the line. We're going to have one awakening coach on the line for every 3 participants. So that means I will be able to guide you into different experiences, and the coaches will be there to give you one-on-one support. You'll divide into a little room. We use a technology for that. You'll divide into a little room. You work with the coaches, and they'll be able to work with you one-on-one. So sometimes they'll work with you, sometimes you're going to be listening, okay? And that is also a beautiful, beautiful way to really go much deeper into this. So that's the 4-part series. I'm not giving you all the details right now because I don't have them handy. But
we'll make sure that that gets out to them in the follow up email. And so absolutely.
Beautiful.
I just
want to mention is on that downloads page also. I've chosen for you my best books and CDs. Like we've got Translucent Revolution, Leap Before You Look, Book and CD, Let Yourself Go. It's a CD series. Usually all of this stuff, it's like with the shipping, it's maybe $150. For your list, we're going to make it available for $89, and we pay the shipping. So that's also another little...
Oh, wow, fantastic.
People can go deeper.
Fantastic.
We want to be as generous as we can with everything.
Well, I so appreciate that. And I know just how powerful my experience was with the four-part teleseminar that I was involved with. It just a really beautiful way to experience, not just to hear about it intellectually, but to really get into the experience of awakening. So thank you for that. I'll include the links and information about that in the follow-up. So I've got a bunch more questions I want to get to and squeeze in before the top of the hour. So let's see how much we can get to. One of the things in your book, The Translucent Revolution, which I recommend everybody get, I really want to focus on one of the concepts, one of the chapters is about really focusing on feeling and about how important it is to become friendly with all feeling, and that this may be a way for us to reduce the drama in our lives. So maybe can you speak a little bit about what it means to be friendly with all feeling and why we would want to have a friendly nature towards emotions like anger or sadness or depression.
Right. Okay, very good, very good. Very nice question. Okay. So, we have feelings anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you have a feeling, let's say a feeling like anger, all right, do you consciously choose, okay, now I think I'm going to have a feeling of anger, or does it just come on its own?
It just comes on its own.
Right. When you have a feeling like anger, it just arises on its own. I think that's going to be true for just about anybody, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When you have a feeling, it just comes by itself, okay? So we don't really have choice about which feelings arise and which feelings don't arise. We have a choice about what we're going to do with them. See that what I mean?
Yep.
You have a choice about the relationship you're going to have. Now, I know that you have friends with small children, don't you, Mary?
I do.
Yeah. And I'm sure many people on the call, either they're parents or they are around small children, right?
Absolutely.
So when a child comes to you, if you're busy, you're on the phone or you're on the computer, you're trying to get some work done, and a child comes to you and says, daddy, daddy, or mummy, mummy, or, Mary, Mary, I need this, I need that. If you push the child away and say, don't disturb me now, go away, what happens to the child?
They keep coming at you.
You got it.
They
exactly.
Turn up the volume.
They turn up the volume. You're absolutely right. I have two kids of my own, and I know that if I ignore them or if I tell them I'm busy, they get resentful, or they used to when they were little anyway, they would get resentful, and they would come at you in a stronger way. Absolutely correct, right?
Yes.
And basically that's going to escalate. If they come back again and say, not now, I'm busy, eventually a small child will either break something or hurt themselves or hurt somebody else to get your attention. Is it true?
Yes, and scream at the top of their lungs.
Exactly. A small child will find a way to get your attention anyway. Okay, on the other hand, if a small child comes to you and says, Mary, Mary, or Mummy, Mummy, or Daddy, Daddy, and you say, yes, I'm on the phone, but come here, come sit on my knee and tell me what's going on, and you hold the child on your knee and you say, come, let's spend some time together, what's going to happen then?
They just sort of melt in and, it's all good.
Yeah, and how long are they going to stay sitting on your lap if you make sure they know they're totally welcome?
Probably a whole lot less time.
Right. They're going to be wriggling off to play some game quicker than you can imagine.
Yeah. Well, you're still wanting to, enjoy the moment. They may be, okay, I got my fix. I'm ready to go.
So that's pretty much how things are. If you say, go away, don't disturb me, they're going to want more attention. If you say, come here and be close to me, they're going to actually wriggle away and do something else, okay? Now, your feelings, you see, your feelings are your children. They arise out of this spaciousness. Where do they come from? They come from this mystery of who you are, okay? So your feelings are your children. We don't actually have so much choice about which feelings arise because they arise spontaneously. We do have choice about whether we're going to push them away or whether we're going to make them feel welcome. Now, I think we mentioned earlier, well, maybe we didn't. I think it was on another teleseminar I was doing. We were talking about sexuality. I don't think it was on this call. It's another call.
No, it's another call.
Yeah. We were talking about sexuality, okay? Now, you know, as I mentioned already on this call, I know, you know, everybody enjoys sex. Sex is a kind of a healthy thing, I would say, okay? But not everybody has necessarily a healthy or a welcoming relationship to sex, okay? So sexual feelings arise for most people, you know, except for maybe the children and the very old. For most people, they have sexual feelings, okay? When sexuality arises, if you welcome sexual feelings when they come, if you feel sex and you go, oh, that's a nice feeling, okay, what's going to happen? If you consider sex to be a good thing, a healthy thing, a nice thing, what's going to happen?
Yeah, you're probably going to have a healthy sex life and maybe move into a nice sexual encounter, maybe.
Exactly. You're going to behave appropriately. You're going to approach your partner. If you don't have a partner, you're going to find a partner. But you're going to behave in an appropriate way. Okay. Now, there are certain cultures on the planet. And there are certain, you know, you could say influences which teach us that sex is not a good thing. Okay?
Like Catholic.
Can you think of any examples like that? What?
The Catholic Church. I'm sure that there's other religions that are very, sex is bad.
Yeah, exactly. I think Muslims are pretty down on sex too, except in the afterlife with a bunch of virgins in heaven or wherever it is. Okay? So there are different groups, okay? I mean, I'm not singling anyone out, but there are many different groups which tell you that sex is not a good thing, okay? Now, let's take the Catholic Church just as an example because it's in the news a lot, okay? Catholic Church is an organization which generally says, you know, for priests, you know, you shouldn't have sex. So what is the result? When you tell a bunch of people don't have sex, what is the result?
It comes out in a perverted way, and altar boys get, you know, molested
exactly.
by
the
priests.
The result is child pedophilia. The Catholic Church has the highest incidence of child pedophilia of any organization on the planet, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what you're going to find is if you tell people they shouldn't have sex, the result will be child pedophilia, animal bestiality, rape, you know, various kinds of perversion, right? You can't stop the fact that we are sexual beings. Human beings are born with sexual feelings. Either you celebrate it and enjoy it and it's all good, or you judge it, you say it's terrible, and it becomes perverted. Same thing with anger, okay? Every human being on the planet occasionally feels anger, right? It's natural. There's no human being I know who doesn't sometimes feel angry or frustrated, okay? So you don't have choice about whether anger arises or not. You have choice about what you do with it.
Yeah.
If you're going to celebrate anger, if you celebrate anger and realize it's a good thing, and if you celebrate it when it arises, then what might you do? You might, you know, because it hasn't built up very much, you might occasionally, you know, raise your voice. If it gets more, you might scream into a cushion or go punch a bag or something, and generally you're going to remain a balanced person.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a judgment, anger's bad, anger's wrong, anger's bad, anger's wrong, violence is bad, violence is wrong, you know what happens is it bubbles up, bubbles up, bubbles up. It builds up like a pressure cooker, and eventually you become like a serial killer or something. If you probably noticed on the news, when you find, you know, when there's some kind of serial murderer has been caught, and then the neighbors, they all come out and they say, I can't believe this happened. This was such a calm, sweet, retiring person, you know, behaved so well. The people who become serial killers are not people who are really aggressive in their day-to-day life. They're people who are very held back, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Generally true, okay? It always comes like, what a surprise. No one would have guessed in such a quiet person, no one knew much about him kind of thing. Okay, so in the same way, any feeling you push away is going to actually, first of all, it's going to build up and become perverted, but secondly, it's going to run your life. You see?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to completely run your life. If you push down sexuality, all you think about is sex.
Yeah.
If you enjoy sexuality, you enjoy it when you enjoy it, and then it's gone. Okay?
Yeah.
Same with everything else.
Well, and how about with somebody, there may be some people that have had experience, let's say, with depression, for example, and it's like, you know, I keep feeling into my depression. I'm feeling into my depression, and it seems like it's lasting on and on and on.
Yeah, okay. Well, first of all, one thing we need to understand, it's a good question. Depression is not a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Depression is not a feeling. Depression is an unwillingness to feel.
Mm.
Okay. Depression is not a feeling. Depression is an unwillingness to feel.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's grief is there. Maybe somebody died and there's grief, but you don't want to feel the grief because it's too painful. So what happens is you tighten certain parts of your body to stop yourself from feeling. And when you tighten those parts of the body, you don't have to feel the grief, but you don't feel love or joy either. You don't feel anything. And so you become depressed. So actually, there's a teleseminar series on our website, which is awakeningworldseminars.com. There's a teleseminar there about the alternative ways of dealing with depression. And of course, if somebody's really depressed, we would encourage them to use medication and, you know, to do the sensible thing. But there are adjuncts we suggest where you can, through breathing, through moving into different feelings consciously, through sharing what's going on with friends, through actually letting energy move, it's not that you feel better. You may feel worse. You know, you may feel the grief you've not wanted to feel, but you don't feel depressed anymore. You see,
mm-hmm.
because now you feel more alive.
But as we feel into those feelings, I know it's one of the things in your book that feeling transforms the more we feel into it.
Exactly. That's the goal. But the first thing is you can't do it for that reason. You see, the first thing is you feel into feelings and you simply feel the feeling. But there are three magic keys. Okay, and we're going to go into this. In that four-part series we described, we're going to introduce people to this, but there are four magic keys. The first key is that anything you feel will change. Whenever you feel into any feeling, it changes into something else. Feelings are constantly swirling around. They only get stuck when we don't want to feel them. The second key is that anything you feel fully will reveal itself to be positive. That's the second key. Anything you're willing to feel completely will reveal itself to be positive. So we discover there is actually no such thing as negative feeling. Very powerful key here. There is no such thing as negative feeling. The idea of negative feeling is a misnomer. There is no such thing as negative feeling. There is only repressed feeling. If any feeling is celebrated, you discover it's positive intention. And the third aspect of this is that any feeling which you really dive into becomes love.
Mm-hmm.
Any feeling which you dive into becomes love. You realize that all feelings are just permutations of love.
Mm, beautiful. Really powerful concepts. Well, and
now, all of this, by the way, all of this, it's one thing, you know, to understand it intellectually. But, of course, it doesn't change your life very much to understand it intellectually. It has to become an experience. And, again, I want to remind you that we are very, very excited and happy to welcome your friends to enjoy this as an experience. And that, again, we've provided 10 practices for free already, just as our gift to you, awakeninggifts.com/Allen, A-L-L-E-N dot H-T-M. No, not H-T-M-L, but H-T-M.
Mm-hmm.
awakeninggifts.com/Allen.htm, and that's where you can turn this into practical information. Okay, go register on that page and we'll send you your gifts. As I said, we've had a little trouble with our server, so if you don't get the gifts today, hang in there and they'll be there in a day or two.
Absolutely. Well, and let's move to I know we've got I don't know how you are in time.
I'm good.
If we can go maybe even 5 minutes after the hour, since we got started.
Oh, I can go for an hour after.
I know. but I really wanted, I know one of the other, through your teachings, really talking about the difference between masculine versus feminine enlightenment.
Ah, big question now.
I know. And here we are, like, 5 minutes before the hour, so I thought we'd maybe factor in a couple extra minutes here.
Okay, good.
But, you know, really, like, what is the difference between masculine versus feminine enlightenment? And actually, it's another big question, but maybe within this question to really distinguish between the difference between awakening versus enlightenment. So if you can pull both of those questions together.
I had a teacher in India, and this teacher, he was really a very generous person. He really guided all of us into into awakening. And he was once asked, what is enlightenment, right? Somebody asked him, what is enlightenment? And he gave a very simple, very beautiful answer. He said, wait for it. He said, enlightenment is a concept in the vocabulary of fools. Very beautiful answer. He said, What is enlightenment? Enlightenment is a concept in the vocabulary of fools. Now, basically, people who talk about enlightenment are generally talking about something that is not part of their experience. They're talking about a concept which is somehow a figment of their imagination in the future. Okay? They're talking about a concept which is a figment of their imagination in the future. If you ask people about enlightenment, people don't even agree on what it means. People have different ideas. It's basically, enlightenment is a way of saying there's something wrong with my experience as it is right now, and there's this mystical, magical state somewhere in the future where everything's going to be okay. All right? Now, what I want to suggest to you is a very radical thing. This is a very radical thing. If you have a spiritual background or you've been influenced by Eastern teachings, it's a very radical concept. Okay? What I would suggest to you is that there is no such thing as enlightenment. It's a myth. It's a myth perpetrated by Indian male teachers. Feminine people are generally not susceptible to that kind of concept. It's an idea that there's something wrong with things as they are now, and we should be in a higher or a better state of consciousness. Okay. All right?
Mm-hmm. Great distinction.
Now, yeah, so I'm not a teacher of enlightenment. The opposite. I'm a teacher encouraging people to let go of the idea of enlightenment.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
I'm not a teacher of enlightenment. I'm a teacher encouraging people to let go of the concept of enlightenment. And when you let go of the concept of enlightenment, what you're left with is now. What you're left with is this moment as it is, with its triumphs and its defeats.
Yes.
With its abundance and its lack. With its health and its disease. With its success and its failure. And when you're willing to meet this moment in its incredible diversity, and you're willing to meet this moment exactly as it is, that's not enlightenment. That's what I would call awakening. Awakening means to actually wake up to what is here exactly as it is. It doesn't mean you reach a future state. It means you relax into your natural state, which is already here, but which was obscured by the mind. Mm-hmm. Now, the mind, what does it do? The mind is always wanting something different and better, right? So what does the mind want? It wants more money. It wants more power. It wants more sex. It wants more of everything. And finally, when it gives up on wanting more material things and more emotional things and more mental things, finally, the last outpost of the mind is it desires enlightenment. It's another trap, you see. It's another way of wanting something different than it's here. When you cancel your subscription to the concept of enlightenment, you arrive where you already are. You arrive here, and you realize that right here in this moment, you are already this mystery, this presence. Right here in this moment, you are already a mystery with a gift to give.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to discover that gift or give that gift if you're fixated on a future state that is different or better than this one.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So let's tie that into then this idea of kind of the difference between kind of like masculine versus feminine.
Okay. Well, the first thing
I better not use the word enlightenment, but masculine versus feminine
awakening.
Yeah.
Well, basically, one thing that's really important to understand is that masculine, we all have masculine and feminine energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have masculine and feminine energy. I have masculine and feminine energy. Most people who are biologically men, and I'm sure you know what that means, it's certain biological attributes.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not clear about it, I'll explain it to you later. But anyway. So most people who are biologically men have more masculine energy, right? And most people who are biologically women have more feminine energy, right? So this is a kind of a way that biological distinctions actually tie to energetic distinctions, okay? Now, one great tragedy that happens is when people get interested in evolution, they have the idea that these distinctions should disappear, so that they should find some kind of merging of masculine and feminine energy, and so lose any biological, any energetic distinction between masculine and feminine. And actually, that's completely not what happens, you know. What happens is there's greater and greater awakening. What happens is, as there's greater and greater awakening, what happens then is that we relax more into our natural state. So a masculine person will relax more into the way they were born, which is to be masculine. A feminine person will relax more into their feminine energy. Now, masculine people have certain qualities, like they're very masculine energy tends to be very focus-driven, very kind of oriented on the future. You know, masculine people tend to be driven towards the future. Feminine people are more oriented towards the present moment. The feminine energy is more oriented towards embrace and awakening. Masculine energy is more oriented towards achievement. Both are good, you see. But if you make awakening just means to relax into your natural state now. If you hand awakening over to the masculine, they're going to make it about a future goal, which is how the concept of enlightenment arises. It's a masculine concept. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you hand awakening over to the feminine, all right, the feminine is going to respond to it in a completely different way. For the feminine, awakening is just about love. It's just about loving and embracing this moment as it is. Feminine people are not oriented towards the idea of enlightenment, of a future state.
Mm-hmm.
So for all of us, we grow enormously, we mature tremendously when we give up on the idea of a future state you should be in, for which there's no proof, and just relax completely into this moment now. And you can do that any moment. Any moment you can just drop into the fullness and the perfection of the mystery that's right here, waiting to be embraced.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Wow. Well, we could go on and on. Gosh, we may have to do another call, I think. so many fantastic
let's do it.
Places we can, you know, let's definitely do that. Absolutely a date. So maybe how about, you know, just maybe some final words as we leave people today, like what may be one thing that they could do here now. We're going to send them to the website. They're going to, if they've not already done this during the call, they're going to go and download their gifts at awakeninggifts.com/Alan.htm. But what's one thing that you can leave people with that they can take on maybe for the rest of their day that may help them to just rest more in a place of awakening throughout the rest of this day?
If there's one thing
mm-hmm.
that would help them, download the gifts. Okay, one thing to help. One thing to help.
Besides,
you know,
that one. I already got that one covered.
Yeah, I'm kind of hesitant to do this, Mary, because we've prepared these things in such a nice way with such detailed instructions. To say it quickly, I think might be a little bit like fast food. You know, it's kind of tempting, but not so good for you.
Yeah.
But I could just say, if I just had to say one quick thing,
yeah,
I would say one quick thing would be to develop an interest, a curiosity, about your own natural state. That would be one thing, is to actually develop an interest in this question of who is actually here, who is experiencing this moment, to actually become interested in your own condition, to become interested in your own state. See, that would be one beautiful thing that somebody could do. Now, we have particular practices for this, but you see, we're so interested in what we're hearing, what we're seeing, what we're understanding, what we're believing, that we lose our interest in who we actually are.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted one thing that would make a big difference, there's one thing. Develop an interest in your own natural condition.
Mm-hmm. And I can see how just dwelling in that question could be very powerful.
Yeah. Well, it's a disposition. I think that's the thing is we get very caught up in wanting particular practices, like do this twice a day, and we do the thing, but we lose the spirit of the thing. So it's the spirit of the thing that's important, and the spirit of the thing is to have genuine natural curiosity in who it is or what it is who's experiencing this moment.
Love it. Wow. So I just have so enjoyed this call. What a rich call, and just, you know, just to be in a conversation about awakening. And I've learned, of course, I've been working with you for 7 months, and I always learn so much every time, you know, every time we talk. So I thank you for being here and just being so generous. And answering what many people would say, gosh, these are tough questions, but I just love how you so beautifully articulate, and I really love the gift that you've offered. I didn't know about that, so this is a really fun surprise, and I'll make sure that link is included. So with that, since we are a little bit over the hour, I know that there our listeners on the other end would like to thank you. So I'm going to just open up the lines and allow them to thank you themselves. And Arjuna, I'm looking forward to hosting another call in the future. And
love it.
Absolutely. So thank you.
Love it. Beautiful.
And the lines are open.
Thank you, Arjuna.
Thank you, Arjuna.
Thank you.
Thank you, Arjuna.
Thank you.
Namaste.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right,
Arjuna.
Very good. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye, everyone. See you on the next call.